Well, hello. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Stirring the Pot. You're listening to Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM LP right here in downtown Vashon.
We prefer you say beautiful downtown Vashon.
Oh, beautiful downtown Vashon. I forgot the word. Okay. I'm Linda Nygaard, by the way. And with me in the studio is the infamous Mr. Tom Conway.
Hello, howdy,
Tom.
Howdy.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's good. It's good.
It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. And we have sort of, I guess we've re-upped, we've reincarnated Stirring the Pot, hasn't been on the air. I think it's been 4 years.
Has it? We re-enlisted. This tells you how much what I do for cleaning and straightening. I was going through some papers, and I thought that it was our little syllabus for this show.
Uh-huh.
It was a syllabus for like 5 years ago.
Was it? Well, we're probably still talking about the same things.
Probably, you know, but exactly.
Both listeners that like us won't remember.
They're still interesting.
Yeah, they're still interesting, that's for sure. Well, you know, Tom and I took our vitamins and we're ready to just talk today and get reacquainted. We have lots of things on our agenda, and we hope that you enjoy the show. So let's start out with what you've been doing, Tom.
Oh, you bet. You know, that's always a good question on Vashon because so many people, like we live on an island where sometimes when people, you ask what they're doing, you get stuff like, well, after I visited the Pope and cured cancer,
I
put on a production at Carnegie Hall,
right.
But I was a little disappointed because I couldn't get James Taylor to do the backup vocals.
Oh, I know.
You know,
I
it's
know.
Sort of those things.
Yeah.
And then, so when people say, well, what are you doing? I'm going like, well, I'm making applesauce and I mowed my lawn.
I know.
And I hugged my bulldog.
Yeah, your bulldog is huggable, though.
Very huggable.
My goodness, he's huggable.
He's very huggable.
You know, so there is that, because I have some friends. I actually had three different friends, none of whom are associated with each other, all in Italy at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And then they all came home from Italy, you know, talking about the wine and the monasteries and the service and the, you know. And it was interesting and it was fun, but I didn't get to go, you know.
So, yeah, you were saying, like, I had a Dick's Deluxe and fries, and I opted for the maple nut ice cream for dessert.
Actually, you know what? This is really something to confess, I guess. But I have been pigging out on Braunschweiger sandwiches lately. And I have found that it satisfies me when my friends are in Italy eating all that stuff.
Well,
and
Linda,
I have Braunschweiger and mustard. Oh, you, it's so good.
You complete me. Because it's one of my, because I try to eat a little more protein than I normally do, you know, just for health reasons.
Yeah.
And I do. I make really crispy toast and put the Braunschweiger on.
Mm.
But you know what? It could be something in the Vashon water, because I was at my aqua aerobics class yesterday.
Yes.
Dancing to the oldies with
and
the seniors.
And then you had Braunschweiger?
No. A friend of mine in the pool was discussing how she was making chicken pate.
Oh,
which,
nice.
For all practical purposes, is.
Is.
Braunschweiger.
Yeah. You know, somebody said, Braunschweiger, what is that? And I said, well, you know, they used to call it liver sausage. And oh, God, that's so gross. I can't even imagine. I said, it's pate, really. I mean, you could put that in a bowl at a fancy party.
Absolutely.
And I put a little pate knife with it,
you know,
and no one would know.
Exactly. You throw a gherkin on it and
or
a caper,
capers,
and people
and
go like, oh,
my
God.
God, you made it?
We had this in Istanbul. It was fabulous.
I know. You know, shortcuts are really fun. I want to go back to what you said about toast.
Sure.
Because there was a debate the other day, I forget where, but it was about toast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about, how do you like your toast? Do you like it crispy and buttery? Do you like it soft and buttery? How do you like it? And then someone was saying, well, I like the way the English toast. No, was saying, I don't understand English toast. And I said, what do you mean? Well, they serve the toast cold and hard, and then they spread cold butter on it, and they eat it. And we Americans like our butter melted into our toast, usually. You know. And so I asked somebody from England about that. I said, so what about this cold toast you guys like? And she said, you know, we like the crisp crunch of the toast and the taste of butter individually. We don't want the butter messing up the bread.
Oh.
So I kind of like that idea.
It's a shocking revelation.
Isn't it?
Well, I think they're daft. Because, You know, excuse me, but an English muffin, the whole point of it is so the, you know, it's called an English muffin.
Yeah, but I don't know that they eat English muffins. Oh. They eat...
Is that just something we've created?
I think we created, like, French fries.
Oh, English muffin, like crumpet, like a crumpet.
Crumpet, that's what I was trying to think of. Crumpets, yes, that the whole point of that. But those are really soft. Those hardly ever get crispy.
Yeah.
So that's a different animal.
Well, I also
I'm talking toast.
No, toast, I totally get the toast. But I think, too, for the longest time, we're getting so many artisanal breads, which are lovely. But they kind of like, they should come with a warning. If you if you toast them toward a certain point, you're going to shred your mouth, you know?
I know.
And so sometimes we
but I love that.
That peasant bread, and you're going, what's the blood here?
What happened? Blood on the why is my mouth so sore tonight? You know, because you don't notice it right away, just crunch, crunch, because it's so good. And later in the afternoon, it's like, am I getting a canker sore?
You drink pineapple juice, and you're like,
That's true. Hey, well, so we already got off topic.
Okay, we did. It's, but
so what have you been doing, Tom, besides
doing?
Going to Italy and not?
So I have been, you know, it is one thing. It's one of those things where I think so many people feel this way about Vashon. You know, I have a little love affair with the place. Mm-hmm, like I go off island and get scared and come back.
I know, immediately, as quickly as possible.
Exactly.
I know.
But I've been doing a lot of stuff. You know, I do stuff around my house, you know, for the most part. So in the farm. And so I've been, you know, harvesting fruit all summer, and I'll make a lot of jam. I do a lot of canning.
I was fortunate enough to get some of your peaches this year.
Yeah, weren't those good?
Oh my goodness, those were good.
Yeah. So, and I'm a real peach fan, so I have I keep adding to the peach tree orchard. Some are undercover in a high tunnel hoop house, and some are outside. And they've done pretty well.
Did you make jam?
Boy, did I!
I bet you did.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
you know, here's the deal.
What,
Linda?
Yes. I know you're going to ask me to pay, right?
No.
Oh,
it's I make a lot, but what I do is it ends up, I do a lot of, like, that's my thing. My family now knows I'm not buying anything for Christmas.
I
give homemade gifts.
But there's nothing better.
Right. But you just have to train them that that's the case.
Well, sure.
But no, they're totally into it. But when I do go home to visit my mother and I see a raspberry jam from 2013, I go, you really are supposed to eat this. She goes, it's special. I want to save it.
No, honey.
It's going to be especially petrified if you don't. Use it, but everybody else. But she's I've trained her now. She eats it. But what happens is I will get you some jam, but I don't want to. I have to sort of see what I got. Mm-hmm. So because what am I going to give you for Christmas? Like a
Nothing.
Big hello?
Yeah.
No, I got to get you
really,
some jam.
You know that, and you know that apricot is my favorite.
Well,
always.
So
has been.
Here's the deal on that. I have 4 or 5 apricots in my high tunnel hoop house.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who aren't familiar with what that is, it's basically like a giant greenhouse covered in plastic. It's like a 30 by 70. And
what do you call it? A wind tunnel? What?
It's called a high tunnel.
High tunnel.
And they're not normally heated. That's part of the deal. But what it does is it extends shoulder seasons of certain fruits and vegetables and flowers and gives you like a month on each end. So there's a benefit to it that way. You couldn't really afford to heat the thing. Because it just...
Well, it would dissipate.
Just dissipate. Yeah. Exactly. So I had like four or five apricot trees in there, and I was so ready to... I gave them the ultimatum, you know, put out or chop,
dead.
Chop. Yeah, because I had them in there four
and
or five
play the
years.
The old George Washington trick.
Exactly. So this year they actually did, and this was their last chance year, and they did really well. And I open up all the doors and the windows so I get pollinators in there, and that works.
Oh,
so
that's
I had
wonderful.
Extra apricots. So now I have, as a result, I have extra apricot jam. So I
excellent.
I have plenty for you, Missy.
Excellent. I'm happy to know that.
Yeah.
So what happens right now?
Oh, so right now, so I just got through making grape juice. And grape juice is like the easiest thing in the world to make.
I saw your post on Facebook about the grape juice.
Yeah.
That spilled all over the kitchen.
I do it every year. It's like it's like I'm genetically predisposed to make a mess when I make jelly or
jam.
Know,
it just happens.
It just, it overflowed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this the richest, deepest, stickiest juice in the world.
Yum.
But yeah, and then I can it. I just put it in a water bath with the sealed top.
So then you can
top.
Get to it when you get to it.
So yeah, I can either make jelly out of it later, mm-hmm. or I can just drink it as juice mm-hmm. throughout the year.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yes.
Yeah.
That. And then I just am now working on apples, doing juicing some
mm-hmm.
apples.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a variety of apples, don't you?
Yeah. I've got a lot. Yeah. A lot of different ones.
You know, I was really, every year I go through this, I pitch a fit every year because I see so many apples on the ground. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't have an apple tree, you know, so I think, what is the matter with you people? But I know that there's an abundance and you can only do so much. Well, I was lucky enough that my friend Christine invited me to come down to her house and pick king apples. And the king apple tree she has must be 100 years old. It's huge.
Yeah, that's a choice variety.
It's so beautiful. And there was something about just picking those apples. It was a sunshiny day, and the dogs were wrestling in the meadow. You know, it was everything perfect, mm-hmm. idyllic for sappy Linda. You know,
oh, totally. You were in a Thomas Kincaid picture.
Please. Maybe Norman Rockwell.
Okay, Norman Rockwell.
Okay,
right.
Yeah, maybe that. But anyway, my point is, these apples were, they're English apples. They came from England. And they were first recorded in like the 1500s for, you history buffs out there are going to kill me.
Wow.
King Richard III is the first person we know who actually had a king apple pie. And that's why they named it the king apple, was after King Richard III. And in those days, they called the pie crust a coffin. Do you know about that?
Mm.
Well, back in the day, back in those days, the pie crust wasn't something you ate. It was just something that held the fruit together. So it was basically like baked wallpaper paste. It was really thick, mm-hmm. and they made it round and tall and like a little tiny barrel. And then they put a barrel lid on top of that of pastry. And then they kind of chipped it off. And inside is what they ate. They didn't eat the crust. And so it was called a coffin.
Hmm.
So that was interesting, I thought. And then, with regard to the American king apple, those came over in the 1700s with the English settlers. And how they got to Washington, I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, interesting. Because there's different king apples. Because the Tompkins king is from New York.
Are you sure?
Uh-huh. We have controversy.
No. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Well...
It was yeah.
Well, there's two different kinds of king apples.
Maybe there's two different types, yeah.
Or maybe your Google search is different from my Google search.
It could be.
You know, because I will tell you.
Yours could be AI generated.
Oh, God, maybe it was. Who knows? Anyway, I did read that.
No.
I did do some research on it.
It makes sense. They call it a king.
They call it a king. It was about King Richard III. That part I'm certain
of.
Yeah.
And you know what it could be is that they brought it over here and there was what they call a sport, which is a mutation.
Well, that's what happened.
And so Tompkins County, New York. So.
Well, of course. There we are.
There we've, so okay.
We're both right.
Okay.
Okay, excellent. On to the next
Kiss
subject.
Makeup. Sorry.
Snorting.
I'm only like 20 minutes in and I'm snorting.
We can't start snorting yet.
I'm sorry.
Well, as you know, I haven't been canning or making jam or anything. Well,
yeah. So what have you been doing?
Well,
I'm sorry, I was playing the male role, not asking you what you've been doing. Oh, did you want to say something?
But what about me? Actually, I have been just doing apples. Apples, apples, apples. And I thought I was going to get really inventive with apples and do something really different. And I didn't. I made apple crisp, and I made apple butter, and I made an apple pie.
Those are solid.
You know, it was like I was looking up weird recipes. Apple chutney, I might still.
Yeah,
I have
but
a
you
bunch,
didn't make like an apple clafoutie or
no.
anything. Clafoutie.
Oh, Shannon, if you're listening, help me. Uh-huh. For those of you who don't know, Tom and I have a running gun battle over clafoutie, which if you don't know what that is, Tom will tell you it's just like a pancake that you bake in the oven. I will tell you that it's a delicate little sponge with fruit in it that it's a French delicacy. So we really have differing opinions about
if
that.
If it was like a German thing called Dutch Hooperhofer, nobody would make it. It's called like Klaufuti. Like, it's the first thing people do. They get so excited. Oh, I just got some cherries. I'm going to make a Klaufuti. Like, no, I'm going to make a Hooperhofer. You know, it would,
that would never happen.
You go like, I don't care what that is.
I would never make that. So I have been doing that. And then the other thing I've been doing and experimenting with baking is I've been having friends over for tea or coffee and trying new recipes.
Do you know, that's a good thing to do. I think like a lot of times, like, food is so expensive. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, and plus sometimes our energy level is, I don't want to do a big thing. Yeah. I wasn't sure if that was a word we can say.
I don't know. I said a bad one last week.
But it is, that's some, because you know, you actually do it. If people come over,
right?
Then they come, you talk, they go.
Yeah. Well, I think I told you I'm not doing dinner parties anymore.
God, no.
I'm just not. It's just, I don't know when the last time was I cooked a fancy dinner. And I really don't miss it. I don't care. You know, the point always is friends around the table.
Exactly.
And the food, you know, it's wonderful when somebody kills themselves for 4 days in the kitchen. It's a beautiful feast. Mm-hmm. But I don't have the energy anymore. And really, quite frankly, the money, the expensive groceries now, if you want to buy fancy food.
Oh, yeah.
To cook, it's really prohibitively expensive.
I'm kind of more of a one pot stop.
Yeah. And now. I don't want to ask my guests, you know, well, to pass the hat when we're having dessert.
No. Well, it's funny because my mom once asked, she goes, does anybody invite you over with where it's not a potluck? And I said,
yeah, no.
And I said, well, it's kind of our thing here. We're a potluck. Yeah. She started calling it Potluck Island.
You know, I went through a phase with potluck and I thought, oh, it's so fun. It's just so fun. And then I went through the phase of, if I get invited to, could I like please get invited to dinner where I don't have to bring anything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, how nice would that be? Well, that happened for me yesterday. I got to go to a friend's house for lunch and I said, the problem is you always say what can I bring? And really you just shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
But I did. And she said, oh, no, my treat. She said, I want to have you for lunch, and I'm making this and this and this, and it's going to be simple, and I don't want you to bring a thing. And it was so nice.
I was going
to
say, when you hung up the phone, did she go like, well, what's wrong with what I make? Is it bad? Like, why aren't you? Why?
Oh, what? She doesn't like my food.
Makes sense now. Okay.
I get it. Ugh. Yeah. Yeah, then I was insulted, of course, because everyone wants me to bring dessert.
Exactly.
Everyone. So that's what I've been doing. And then I had a really fun time. You know, I wasn't involved, but I was a helper with the cast for The Story of Edgar Sawtell.
Oh, wow.
The play that was at Vashon Rep, by Vashon Rep at VCA. And so I was just sort of on the edge of, you know, running people here and running people there and sending out an email and just doing some sort of detail volunteer work for them. Mm-hmm. And one thing I got to do that was really fun was organize the cast party, which happens after the last performance. Mm-hmm. It's a tradition in the theater. And we did it at the wine shop, which I have to confess I'd never even been in. And I went in the wine shop. Do you know where it is? It used to be Cliffs.
Oh, Cliffs. It used to be. Yeah, it's down in... what do you call that part of town?
I don't know. It's a place. I always say it's a place where the inn is. It's by the Syrian cart.
Yeah, Vashon.
Yeah.
Lodges.
Yeah, something.
But it's down there. Okay.
Yeah. So I went in, and my goodness, what a wonderful place! And then the proprietor is a woman named Liz.
I just met her. I met her at the Voice of Vashon, the Voice singing competition. She sat next to us.
Did she? She's lovely.
She was.
And the food she put out was unbelievable. I don't know that I've seen a spread like that on Vashon. Truly.
Oh, cool.
It was unbelievable. And she did. It was beautiful. She closed the shop for the private event and fixed food for, there were about 35 of us probably.
Mm-hmm.
And everything from salmon rillettes to spanakopita to cheese and potato bites, and I mean, all kinds of, I don't know, maybe 10 different kinds of finger food things.
Wow.
And some really good wine, and it was affordable and lovely. And so I really loved that I got to organize that and help with the menu, but I didn't have to do the work.
No, that's awesome.
Which was really fun. So I enjoyed that.
It's also nice to have that discovery of a, you know, a new place that we just haven't been to.
I know. I really loved it. So Do you want to talk about food in general and like what we talked earlier about food memory, like the memory of food? You know, there's an evocative smell you get if it's something like if you smell a peach pie, does that take you to your grandma's kitchen? Or if you're smelling a roast beef or something, do you have early food memories that brought you to? I just think it's interesting how we all arrive at the place of food is kind of my life, really. I mean, even though I'm not cooking as much anymore, it's still I still love to talk about it. I love to explore it. I love the food history and the things that make people happy about food. So do you have, is there something in your background that rings true for?
Oh, yeah. I was lucky because I grew up in a household where my mom was a really good cook and my grandmother was a good cook, both grandmothers. And I remember, though, I remember when we would go out to eat. Like, what's so funny is my mom would make great food, but I would remember, like, sort of the junk.
You know? Well, that was really
because
good.
Because it
you
was
were
like, at that time, we lived in South Carolina, and we would go to this burger place on the beach, and then they would wrap up their burgers a very specific way, and you had those crinkly fries and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I really loved that because my mother would replicate. She'd have burger basket night, you know,
a big treat.
But I think probably the epiphany of like how good food is when we went out like on a birthday and you go to a special place in South Carolina. It was in an area called Myrtle's Inlet, and there were like all these seafood places. And that's when Myrtle Beach was really a sweet little town and not a obnoxious sort of brands. It's just so overbuilt and so highly populated now. But then it was like we would ride our bikes to the beach.
Mayberry,
you know?
RFD.
What's that? Yeah, it was very much like that. But I remember I would always get like shrimp baskets.
Oh, yes.
And that's when your parents would go, "You don't eat the tail." And I go, "I don't see why not."
Doesn't matter. It's nice and crunchy.
Exactly.
I know.
And just the idea of those like batter fried shrimp, I still like have a very fond memory over that.
You know, that reminds me when I was growing up, I lived in a little tiny town in northeastern Montana, like, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000 people. Little tiny.
Was it Shelby?
No, it was a little town called Wolf Point.
Oh.
Way up in the northeastern corner. And the restaurants there were, you know, hamburger joints, and the fancy place was the Elks Club. And if we had a birthday or a wedding or an anything, we went to the Elks Club. And the Elks Club did those old-fashioned, the shrimp reminded me because that, you know, I'm sure it was frozen and, you know, they put it in the oven. And but man, was it good. It was like such a treat because we were raised on beef and, you know, that, but that seafood, we called it seafood.
Totally.
We went, you want to go have a seafood dinner? But they had the relish tray. Do you remember the relish tray with some cherried crab apple, pickled crab apples? And
oh my
some
God, that was
celery.
My favorite.
I know,
my favorite thing as a
and
kid.
And olives
pickled
and
crab apples.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. And so that
at
was.
At every buffet.
At a buffet.
It wasn't a buffet without the, at least in the South, it was not a buffet without pickled
it.
Crab
yeah.
apples.
In fact, my mom made, she had a crab apple tree and she made pickled crab apples. And oh my gosh, I still like them. They're still good. But anyway, that was sort of my first idea that there was such a thing as fancy food. And that was fancy, let me tell you that. We dressed up, the men wore suit and ties. You know, it was really, it was, so, I don't think they do anymore, but it's still there.
Oh, that's, it is still
there. It's still
there,
and it's still the place. There's a couple other, you know, nice restaurants too.
All right, I'm sorry, guys. I have to get in on this.
Wait, I have to
introduce.
I didn't introduce you, and I'm sorry about that. You know, sitting here with us is Truman.
Yes.
Truman O'Brien is one of our favorite, what do we call Truman?
We love him.
And
we love him.
He's running the board for us today, and we'll be doing that from now on. And
because we're just the pretty talent.
No, it's because we can't learn.
We're not capable.
Your best learning. Right?
We don't know how.
There's a sign up that says, "Tom and Linda, stay away from the,
from
the master
away.
Board.
Don't touch nothing.
Back away from
no,
the master
I
board.
Have to tell you that on Wednesday nights, the Elk Club was closed.
In Wolf Point?
Yes.
It was?
Yes.
And how do you know that?
Well, I happen to know that because my father owned the biggest building in Wolf Point.
Yeah.
The Sherman Hotel.
Yeah, we knew that.
Oh,
wow. The Wolf Point Hotel.
Sherman Hotel. The Sherman
Hotel. Oh, no,
Hotel.
The Wolf Point was a different one. Yeah, this was the
Sherman Hotel.
Wow.
And we put in our very fancy supper club downstairs. My father did this so that he could sell his own beef. I'm serious.
Well,
he did.
That's smart of him.
And he built put in a little barbecue thing, you know, where you could watch your steaks being cooked. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you grow up there?
No, I spent 2 summers there, right out of high school. Yeah.
Well, you know, as I got into high school, as I grew up, that was where we went for prom night.
Oh yeah.
We went to the hotel. At the time, of course, I didn't know Truman.
Oh no, that was way back there. Besides that, I would.
That's
been
kind
old.
Of a funny coincidence.
Yeah, isn't that something? Yeah, but
you knew Truman from airplane days.
Yeah, when I used to work for Alaska Airlines. But I mean, Wolf Point's a little more specific.
Oh yeah, way specific. but let me tell you that Wednesday nights were our big night
because the Elks were closed.
There you go. So I just had to throw that out.
Well, thank you. That's a good memory too. Yeah. That's a really good memory. Yeah. So. Anyway, back to the origins of loving food. My mom was an incredible cook. And in Wolf Point, Montana, in the middle of winter, do you remember those cookbooks, the Time Life cookbooks that were like Italy and Spain and all? Those were like all the rage when I was in high school. And she got one from China. And we were just kind of looking through it one day. And she said, oh, Peking duck, I wonder what that's like. And, you know, the guys were hunting. So they got a duck, and we made Peking duck and scallion pancakes and things we'd never even heard of, let alone know what they were.
Well, that's pretty adventurous.
And so we ate that. We had a lot of Scandinavian food, which was all white, which I loved, you know, and a lot of venison dishes that were different from what you would eat now. But she was a marvelous cook, and that's where I learned what food does for conversation. For people, for the camaraderie that you have around the table. And I think that's what I love most about it.
Yeah. My mom would have Bridge Club, you know, and it was right out of a Tennessee Williams novel. All the women wore gloves.
Oh,
they had big hair.
And their purses.
Yeah. And at that time, my mom and dad didn't smoke, but everybody else seemed to smoke.
I was going to say, and were the ladies sitting around smoking? There's always an ashtray on the card table.
And you could see sort of like, their nose and down, but above their heads were smoked out. But my mom would always make, food for the Bridge Club. And it was one of those things where you thought, like, the most extravagant thing in the world were poppin' fresh orange rolls. They had just come
out. Whack 'em and, bake 'em.
They came with their own icing. Mm-hmm.
My mom made, for her Bridge Club, she made these tuna things that was like tuna and cheese in a bun that you wrap in foil and put it in the oven. And oh my God, it was so elegant.
Exactly. Little Ritz crackers with little square cheeses on them.
Oh, it's just something else, you know? It really was. Well, we have some of the same kinds of memories, completely different areas of the world, completely different families.
Yeah.
Food's the what?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, when I was a little boy, too, we lived in Japan. And so one of the things my mom would make, and I don't even know if the pronunciation is correct, but my dad would call it yakimish, you know, yakimishi. And it was basically just stir-fried rice, but it was Americanized.
Uh-huh.
But it was like that followed me my whole life in my mom's kitchen. And it was basically cooked rice, hamburger, carrots, scallions.
Had to have an onion.
And an onion. Mm-hmm. And then you'd scramble an egg, a couple eggs in it.
Yes.
And then that's what you'd have in it. And then you'd have soy sauce to put on it if you wanted.
You know, my dad's best friend was Korean. And he taught us about fried rice. Which was great, you know.
It's nice to get it from a native country.
But, you know, my mom was Canadian, too. And so the Chinese contingent in Canada, they have much better Chinese food than we do, I think. But
did you ever make a tour? What do they call those like meat pies? That's Quebec, I guess.
A tartine.
No. I'll think of it. It's a Christmas treat.
Deborah Taylor makes those.
A Christmas treat.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
No, that's...
It's a big meat pie.
Those are the French.
That's correct.
And the French are different than the Western Canadians.
Sorry.
Okay.
That's right. You're from the West Side.
Yes, we're from the West Side. well, what fun. I think we could talk about that for an hour by ourselves.
Exactly.
Do you have a favorite style of food or you just love food?
Do you know, it's funny how it's changed, you know, how... Mm-hmm. I think we're really blessed in the United States because, or especially in the Northwest, we have such variety. You know, we have such abundance.
I know.
You know, from seafood to fruits to vegetables to like just.
It's like fresh is the thing now, I think.
And there's really a renaissance on the island, I think, of farm stands.
Like, oh, I love that.
If you can't
much.
Find fresh vegetables, you're not trying.
I know.
There are so many, and I think COVID
and
had
fresh
a little,
dairy products.
Definitely, just down the street from me is Venison Valley.
You know, they have the best cream in the universe.
Yeah,
the best in the universe. And I went there to get some, and I thought, geez, it's $6 a pint. Golly, that's expensive. And then I went to the store, and it's $5.89.
I was just going to say,
you know, it's like, whoa, okay, I haven't been paying attention because I just buy it.
Yeah,
you know?
That argument doesn't work anymore.
No, it doesn't.
Farm stands are a bargain.
They are a bargain.
Yeah,
and it's fresh and beautiful.
Plus, they
and
have butter, and they have
mango lassis,
buttermilk, mango lassis,
chocolate milk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a wonderful
place.
Yeah,
Tommy Likey.
Yeah, Tommy Likey. You know, let's talk a little bit about a current event that just happened here. I think I don't remember the date, but do you remember when Chef Dre of Gravy won the Thriftway shopping contest?
I love that story.
I know. And you get 3 minutes, right? You get your cart, you get 3 minutes, and then you get all the groceries you want.
Right.
In three
minutes. It's a raffle. A raffle, right. He entered a raffle with the Voice of Vashon.
Right, but then, yeah, it's a benefit for Voice of Vashon. Yeah. But then,
no, I didn't know. Did we say that, or I just wasn't paying attention?
I don't know.
I didn't know if people knew it was a raffle, like you buy a raffle ticket.
Oh, no, I didn't
ticket.
Say that.
Okay.
Yeah, you buy the raffle ticket. And then...
And he won.
And he won. So he got to go do the three-minute shopping spree at Thriftway.
For those of you who don't know Dre, he's an amazing chef on the island who he and his wife, Peppa, own Gravy. The restaurant in downtown Vashon.
And he's a very community-minded man.
Wonderful man.
I'd like to know what was in his grocery cart because, you know, how do you decide in 3 minutes what you're going to do? I said, I would go for the frozen seafood first or the fresh lobster, that kind of stuff, and the fancy cheeses. That's where I'd go.
The coroner would say she had a good last day. But one too many lobsters.
Too much cholesterol. So anyway, he donated that food to, he and Jan at the country store combined their efforts and raised funds for the food bank. And they did a barbecue. I don't remember the date, but they had 175 people. Chef Dre cooked fabulous barbecue.
Anybody was welcome.
Anybody was welcome. You could come. It was pay as you will. Don't pay if you don't want to pay. Mm-hmm. It was a community event. And I just talked with Jan this morning, who owns the country store. And she said they raised a little over $10,000 for the food bank from that. And Dre did that.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
I mean, wow.
I know. I'm sure. And like on his day off, he's catering
200 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty terrific. And, you know, speaking of the food bank, you were going to talk a little about the tours they're doing and their new building. And are you ready to do that?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, we were talking about it all started when, what's your name, lady? Linda.
I'm your dearest friend.
You know what? Her beauty stops me, halts me in my tracks. And she has a good personality. So basically, we don't have breaks. Do we have breaks?
Yeah,
we need to talk
sponsor. About the food bank.
Okay, we'll talk about the food bank.
There's no meaning. Right. So, but right now we want to thank our sponsors.
Okay.
In a second. When you push the button.
Okie dokie.
Voice of Vashon programming support is brought to you by Cafe Vino Olio, featuring house-made bagels and Fioretta coffee expertly roasted and prepared. Or enjoy wine by the glass and a baked treat in their Vashon Town Cafe. Don't forget grab-and-go specialty wines and pantry items on your way out. For hours of operation and to find out more, call 206-999-4742.
Voice of Vashon thanks Windermere Real Estate for its support, making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at windermerevashon.com.
And we're back. You're listening to The Voice of Vashon. This is Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard here with Tom Conway, and we're chatting about food and general stuff.
Yeah.
Right now, we're going to talk about the food bank on Vashon, which has some huge changes coming up.
Yeah, the food bank is really a remarkable thing here. Mm-hmm. You know, So
pillar of the community.
It really is so mm-hmm. wonderfully run, and so many volunteers and people, and, mm-hmm. and actually, you know, the whole staff is really committed. But sort of the big shining star on the horizon is they've worked to move the current facility, which is up at Sunrise, to move it to. Where the Methodist Church is in town, not
right
actually
on the highway.
Yeah, not actually the church
not
itself,
at the church,
but
yeah.
the offices behind the church.
Yeah.
So they'll be redoing those as well as adding to make a facility, and it'll be right in the middle of town, so it'll be really convenient. It'll be modern.
So that's a whole lot easier for people to get to then, because they don't have to go. There's no transportation up to the top of that hill.
Right. Yeah.
And this will be the bus, or you can walk. It's right here.
And it's going to be really kind of, I think, like a grocery store, mm-hmm. you know, like you, mm-hmm. you're going to feel good about going in mm-hmm. there. And not that you don't feel good about going in the one now, but it's an old facility
yeah.
and there's something yeah. that's uplifting about a new facility
yeah.
that has been planned specifically
right.
to serve the community. It's going to be, the address is 17928 Vashon Highway. Southwest.
And do you know, when are they going to be done with this? Is this like a year out, or is it when is this going to happen?
I think they're still in the process of fundraising, because it's,
okay.
it's a...
so nobody's pounding any nails yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
But they're going to be renting, it's a 3,500 square foot building that they're renovating on that property, and they'll also be constructing a 3,900 square foot mm-hmm. Specific food bank warehouse to create... sort of this wonderful community resource
mm-hmm.
hub.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually, I think they're going to have, let me take a look real quick. They're going to have a tour of, or
oh,
sort of
right.
an explanation of it.
Pretty soon.
The 24th. It's going to be on the 24th of October from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Do I need to RSVP for that?
Doesn't say you do. And you mm-hmm. just need to meet at the current food bank.
Oh, okay.
So you'll be seeing what's happening now mm-hmm. and then what the future holds.
That's wonderful. I'm really happy. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the gleaners for the food bank.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know about that?
Just sort of on the tangential.
Yeah, that's kind of all I know about it. But I know that the food bank has people who will come to your orchard. They'll come and, you know, pick your gardens. A lot of people had way too many zucchini and way mm-hmm. too many cucumbers and way too many things to eat or can themselves. And so if you call the food bank, they will send people to actually harvest it and bring it back mm-hmm. to the food bank and serve the community with it, which I think is fabulous. It's a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, on Vashon, almost everything is organic. Mm-hmm. I think most people don't say that.
Yeah, most people don't use pesticides that I know of. I don't use them in my
mm-mm.
orchard. In fact, what's great about that is I'll definitely do that next year. This year, I thought I was going to do stuff with some harvests and some fruits,
mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
and by the time you get to them, it's too late.
It's too late.
And
yeah. So you sort of have to plan.
You really have to plan,
yeah.
And it'd be great to just, what I already know it's not, I'm not going to be able to handle only so much,
mm-hmm.
and I'll bring it down there.
Well, your new king apple tree won't be bountiful by next year, I'm pretty sure. But
no.
It'll be fun. So, yeah. And then, hey, you know, one thing that Tom and I did, this is for our listening audience, both of you people out there. Tom and I went to a movie the other night at Vashon Theater called Food and Country. And it was a documentary by Ruth Reichel and Alice Waters. Both brilliant women in the food industry, well-respected, one for her cooking and one for her writing, and, her cooking, too, I guess. But anyway, this documentary just knocked me out. I couldn't believe the numbers of facts and kind of some alarming things they told us. It contained, there were ranchers, there were harvesters, there were cooks.
Yeah, it was kind of the whole. What was so great about the movie is, it was made during COVID, so it was how Ruth Reichel or.
I've always said Reichel, but in the movie she said Reichel.
Okay, so Ruth Reichel, how she decided to make this movie because she knew there would be sort of impending doom in distribution systems because if the restaurants are closing, then the farmers don't have anywhere to bring their goods, and especially the small centralized farmers who make restaurant food.
Well, and what she discovered through this voyage she was on was that the whole food system not only was disrupted during COVID, but it brought to life much of the trouble in our food system in the United States on a permanent basis.
Yeah, it was really, I think it was definitely eye-opening. You know, like just one of the facts I still am stunned by is that there are really just four companies and four major meat packers control
in the whole
industry.
Country.
Yeah, and two of them are basically majority owned by Brazilians.
One of them's wholly owned by Brazilians.
So it's sort of like, I have nothing against Brazilians, but it's just sort of odd that, you know, it's it just seems like an odd statistic that, okay. And the ranchers, but the good part about it was, I thought about the movie, or about the documentary, is she did such a beautiful job of weaving stories of individuals. So it wasn't sort of a statistically downer film. It was more about what people were doing to make their lives work in their industries and their agricultural systems.
And some of the most inventive chefs trying to retain their staffs in a time when there was no money, there were no people coming in the restaurants. You know, they had to pay rent and the landlord wasn't willing to give them a deal. And how does this work? And what are we going to do? So there was a lot of story, a lot of heart in it.
It's totally true. And, you know, we all had our favorites, but they were all the characters in the food industry, in the restaurant industry, and in agriculture were fascinating humans. And you thought you knew them, like when you start interviewing.
I know.
It's really good.
Like, I'm going to call her the next time I'm in New York.
You sort of felt like, you know, you realized that you were prejudicial on a lot of levels about things.
Right.
And then when you got to know these people, you were going, holy moly, what they're up against, the amount of work and time they put into it. And the one I loved was the woman, I can't remember her name. Was she Cambodian? She was a chef.
Oh, and they moved?
Yeah, they moved. But what was the funny part of it the not funny part was that she didn't think she could sustain her restaurant and because she uses such high quality ingredients and she's, you know, a really gifted chef. And someone in her group said, well, it's because you don't charge enough. And she goes, well, I can't charge enough because it's, and they said, well, you're making quality food. You just need to make your restaurant fine dining. And she did that. You know, it's unfortunate you couldn't, but she took it to a different place.
They moved.
And they moved.
Words.
And then she made didn't she make the employees part owners?
Yes.
So they created
profit
like this,
sharing, some kind of something.
Yeah. So everyone was involved in it. And it was just how they really acted in ingenious ways to redefine themselves.
Because she's the one who was insistent that the front of the house and the back of the house are paid equally.
Yes.
And you know, people aren't used to that.
Yeah.
You know, so that was, she had some people quit over that, but she retained most of her staff. Yeah. So I the reason I bring this up is I think everybody should watch this, and I can't believe how many people didn't come to the movie, but you can stream it now.
Yeah.
It's called Food and Country, and I know it's on Amazon and YouTube.
It's
and
on Apple Plus.
Apple TV. You have to pay for it. I mean, it's rent.
Like $4.99.
I think you can do
but
that.
It's really good.
It's really good. It's great storytelling in a way that you wouldn't think of as a documentary, really, about food systems.
Exactly. And that's what makes, I think, a good documentary is certainly the subject matter is the umbrella of the story, of course.
Right.
But underneath it are all the people that it's portraying. And she did such a good job of letting you see how hard people work and how they have to spin on a dime. Everyone from, they had like a Nebraskan farmer who was going from regular corn to organic corn because mm-hmm. it was his wife's idea. So she became part of the team to make it happen.
Well, and in the story, they were even talking about how they got at loggerheads sometimes, two of them did. But she said, we stay civil, but we do disagree a lot about how we're going to do this.
Exactly.
One thing that I loved, and this is, you know, in no way reflects the opinions of Voice of Vashon, but it's my opinion only. There was a cowboy in there, a Republican cowboy, who stated that if you do research and look at history in our political government, you will see that farmers and ranchers make more money when Democrats are in power.
Right, and he was quick to say, but it doesn't change anyone's voting.
He said that was sort of the irony of where he was. But he said that.
Yeah, and I'm sure he was a Republican.
He said he was a Republican.
It was really interesting, and what was great about it is you didn't see him. You understood him more mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. he explained himself, and some things made sense, some things didn't. But
and then there was the
Georgia guy.
The Georgia guy. Oh, he has my heart. He was so elegant in his farmerdom.
He was a totally cool farmer.
You just want to hug him. He was very upset. I mean, you could tell he had a broken heart.
Yeah.
Over what was going on and the fact that little farmers like he were not able to make their livings in a way that they need to make their livings because of these giant corporations that are price setting. And I have a friend in Montana who grows cherries. Mm-hmm. He has a huge cherry orchard. And last year when I spoke with him, he said that they left. Wrote it down. They left 30,000 pounds of cherries on the ground.
Thank God.
Because what happened was there was no market. And he said it had to do with the politics of the new tariffs. And we won't go there mm-hmm. about who put those new tariffs into effect. Mm-hmm. But the new tariffs took over the market and there wasn't a market for them, you know. And he was heartbroken over that. There was no place. I mean, he gave away what he could give away.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just rotted.
Mm-hmm.
And this is partially due to the big food systems, big food companies like Sysco.
Right.
That own everything.
Well, that was like one of the farmers who said they were a struggling small farmer and they mm-hmm. tried to get this contract and they provided really what seemed to be better food, fresher mm-hmm. food.
Fresher food, organic food.
Organic. And they lost the contract because another multinational company was able to, like, put in cheese packs or something like, you know, string cheese because they needed another thing in there.
Yeah.
And so basically they just got sort of a mediocre everything
they
instead
got more,
of a wonderful
right.
box.
So anyway, if you are so inclined, check your computer and look for
this movie.
Two thumbs
up, sister.
Oh, at least two.
Yeah.
How many do you have?
So far, just two.
Yeah. So what's on the agenda for you nowadays?
Right now?
Yeah. What are you doing
today? You know, I'm trying to... The apple crop is, what's so good about apples is they do last. So mm-hmm. I have them out on my front mm-hmm. porch. It smells mm-hmm. so good.
Oh, doesn't it?
But
I know when I came home from Christine's with a giant bag of apples, I set them on the counter, and my whole kitchen pretty soon was just fragrant with apples. That smell is just fabulous.
Yeah. My next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to try to juice them. Mm-hmm. I have a borrowed juicer.
Oh.
I don't have a...
Is that like a press?
I don't have a press, but I have a juicer.
Mm-hmm.
And so this juicer is like a centrifuge.
Oh, juicer.
Like
yeah.
a centrifuge.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to can some juice,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm going to make some jelly, and I'll make mm-hmm. some apple butter, and then I'll slice up some apples and freeze those for pies.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have quinces next on the list.
I'll try.
It's so funny. I'm trying to decide if I like it, quince, you know, like I grow them
mm-hmm.
and they're beautiful. The trees are beautiful.
And they smell so good.
And then you make membrio.
I love membrio.
But you put it with a tree. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where it's a hard sell for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. It is. But I'll tell you what I love with quince is quince chutney.
Oh, I can make that.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll do that maybe.
And that's really good with chicken or fish or anything.
Okay.
I just love it.
I'll do that.
And put a lot of pepper in it.
Mm-hmm.
Some cranberries. It's really good.
Yeah.
I have a good recipe for it.
Oh, good. I would like that.
Yeah, I'll give it to you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Well, obviously, since I'm not harvesting anything, I'll just tell you what I'm doing. And that is I'm taking off for the Yukon. And I'm going to see what they eat up there.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how are you getting there? Are you flying into Yukon?
No, I take a train from Seattle to Vancouver. And in Vancouver, I have a cousin I haven't seen in 30 years, and she's going to pick me up at the train. I'm going to spend the night with her. And then I fly nonstop from Vancouver, BC, to Whitehorse, Yukon, on a 737.
Right on.
Yeah, so it's going to be quite an adventure. I've never been up there. And I'm curious about what's going on with food up there. You know, there, I have relatives who live there. As mm-hmm. I said, my mom is Canadian, and her sister lives there. And so I'm going to go visit her and some cousins. And they came to visit me a year
How
ago.
How big is Whitehorse?
You know, I should know that, but it's pretty sizable town. I think it might be like 150,000.
Let me look that up.
Look it up and see how wrong I am. It might be 50,000, but it's pretty big.
Because when I used to live up in Juneau and we go to Skagway, you could take mm-hmm. the train from Skagway
to Whitehorse. It doesn't go to Whitehorse anymore because that's something I wanted to do. But I do know one thing we're going to do is take a drive to Skagway. It's a 2-hour drive.
Oh, that'll be beautiful.
Which will be beautiful. And we're going to get treated to fresh out of the water crab.
Oh, baby.
I just can't wait.
34,000 people.
34,000? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's not quite 150.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Okay. In the old days when I used to live up there in Juneau, you could go to the docks and get mm-hmm. king crab.
I wonder if you can still do that. I bet you can.
I don't know. That's were the days when it was like $5 or $10 for a whole crab.
It's so expensive now. I mean, that's going to be the big night out for sure.
Oh, it'll be
awesome. Be really expensive, but there's something about that crab that just comes out of the water like that.
Yeah, when you get it fresh, not frozen, it's pretty special.
Mm-hmm. It is pretty special. So I'm going to come back with some recipes for moose.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, will you bring back moose?
Maybe.
Moose eat squirrel.
Natasha.
Natasha.
Boris.
Boris.
Yeah. One of my cousins who lives there got a moose this year, so he's a hunter, and I'm hoping to be able to try it.
Man.
But that, you know, again, that's a big cooking family. And my aunt is a gardener and a canner. So it'll be really interesting to see the differences in what's available up there.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, what we have here. I don't know.
You know, it's pretty crazy. When I was up in Alaska, and Truman is well aware and familiar with Alaska,
mm-hmm.
And also Juneau, where I was.
Mm-hmm.
That when I first moved there, it was like the biggest deal that there was a McDonald's that opened up.
Oh, I bet.
And people go out, what they call out the road. Out the road to out the valley where.
Is that like we go over town? They go out the road?
Yeah, it's basically like, think of like if you're looking at topography, like a set of dumbbells, like the one end of the dumbbell is the old town
uh-huh.
that's in the mountains. Uh-huh. And then you go along Gastineau Channel to the other flat area where the Mindenhall mm-hmm. Glacier is in the airport.
Mm.
And that's like out the road. Is that out the road? That's out the road, yeah. And it goes out to Tea Harbor
that's
and stuff.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, but when I was there, it was so funny because it was before, like now there's a Costco and a Fred Meyer.
Oh, yeah,
we had like food, we had Foodland. And in fact, Sandpiper on the island, the chef at Sandpiper, he owns the restaurant up there.
And oh,
when
really?
I was there, it was called... The Fiddlehead, uh-huh. and I think when he had it, and then he changed the name, I think the Sandpiper up there as well.
Do they have fiddlehead ferns up there?
They do.
They do.
And it was
those are hardy ferns.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, wow.
Yeah. So anyway, but it was funny how the food,
mm-hmm.
I think the food's about the same price now. As in, I think the food in Juneau might be cheaper than the food on Vashon.
Yeah.
You know, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's,
it'll be interesting. You know, I always like to investigate grocery stores no matter where I go and see what's there and see what looks good and what looks terrible. And I know my family in Montana considers themselves in a food desert, and it really is pretty awful.
That would be really...
It really is awful. I mean, their produce is ugly, and it's just awful. And there's really no excuse for it. It's just that it's the big companies, and they send trucks of, you know, stuff that's been in the warehouse for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway.
What'd you have for lunch today, by the way?
What did I have for lunch? Oh, my. I didn't have lunch, but I ate a late breakfast, and I had oatmeal. I had oatmeal with chopped up apples and cranberries and brown sugar and butter.
Dang.
It was good.
This is a perfect opportunity to, like, people are born-again Christians.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a born-again air fryer believer.
Like, oh, aren't they?
I got an air fryer, and all my friends make fun of me because they...
Did you do your hamburger in an air fryer?
I do that on a frying pan. I do the little fry pan on that.
Yeah.
But the tater tots that I eat with it are in that air fryer. Nothing like a good tater tot or waffle. But the other... It's so... remarkable bacon.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so fast. And unlike, here's the deal.
What?
Slow cookers and crock pots, they take forever and they make food sloppy, runny, smushy.
Well, and you still have to do a lot of prep. I mean, you might as well just put it on a stove.
Right. But with a slow cooker, slow and mushy.
Mm-hmm.
And with an air fryer, it's fast and crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like fast and crunchy.
I like fast and crunchy too. I do very much. I love my air fryer.
It's pretty great. You can do, and I'll even do like fish in there.
Mm-hmm.
It does beautifully. Mm-hmm. It does fish.
Like fish and chips. I've done fish and chips
that
in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody told me the other day, a friend of mine just got an air fryer, and this person is a French fry addict.
Uh-huh.
And they buy Or Ida frozen French fries and then do them in the air fryer.
Oh, uh-huh.
But apparently Or Ida has come out with a fast food restaurant style French fry in the frozen section.
For your air fryer?
For your air fryer.
Oh, God.
And that they're, you know, he was telling me it was just fabulous. You can't even believe the crunch on the outside and the soft, creamy inside of that potato.
Oh, God, that reminds me. I have a funny story. I was just visiting a friend of mine who we jokingly say has the palate of a 10-year-old, and he only eats like 5 things, and one of them is like hamburgers and French fries.
That's, uh-huh.
Then that counts as 2 items. and he was at Trader Joe's. This is so Seattle area, you know, so the Northwest. And he's looking for this. He was raving about these waffle fries at Trader Joe's, and so he's looking and he can't find it.
Like frozen
waffle fries. But they're special. They're Trader Joe's special waffle fries. So he finds somebody who is trying to avoid him. And she says, and he goes, "Excuse me, I'm looking for the waffle fries."
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, "Well, they should be there." And then the other woman who's working next to her, she goes, "Oh, aren't those good?" And he goes, "Yeah." And she goes, "They're right over here." And she points to him and she goes, "Now, what protein are you going to be eating with those?"
Oh, she did.
Yeah, that's a little shame there.
Oh,
yeah,
just a little.
You can have your car, but what protein will you be eating?
Some cheese sauce.
I said, "What did you say?" And he goes, "Well, I didn't know what to say." And I said, "A hamburger?"
Yeah. Well, yeah. Is that right? That's funny.
That's so funny.
That is funny. Well, I'm a big fan of Trader Joe's.
Yeah, have some fun stuff.
I love Trader Joe's. Well, you're kind of the hamburger guy.
Oh, yeah. I have a hamburger diet.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm such an elite athlete.
I know.
Well, I do it. It's like my easy thing to do, and as long as I don't have any side dishes with it,
like no tater tots,
no French fries.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just have a hamburger, and then I can put a really good onion. I make it really good.
Mm-hmm.
Good onion, good tomato if they're
available.
All the right condiments.
Yeah.
And it really fills you up. And then for dinner, I'll have that for lunch, and then for dinner, I'll just have a salad.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's true. I swear to God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't eat
dinner very much. I'm not hungry after about 4 until about 9. And then I want pie. You know?
Who doesn't?
Oh, man.
Who doesn't?
I know. But I my eating habits have changed. I guess I'm getting old. I'm not sure.
You look fabulous.
Well, thank you.
You do.
I'm just fabulous.
You do. You look fabulous.
I like to eat about mid-morning, 10, 11 o'clock, eat something, and then eat something again around 3 or 4. And that's it.
Yeah, it is. It is something like
maybe an apple or something at night.
All you young people out there, when you get older, your eating habits do change.
They
it's so odd.
As do your sleeping habits. But we can talk about that in another day. And
your hair falls out and your teeth sag.
Oh my God! Don't go there.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, it's terrible. I have Yeah, yeah, we can talk about that another day.
Yeah.
There must be some natural foods we can eat to help that.
It's true.
Yeah.
Boy, this has been fun, Miss Linda.
Well, this has been fun. Thank you, Tom, for coming in.
Yeah, thank you, Truman.
Yes, thank you, Truman. And we will see you all. We are going to be on the second and fourth Tuesdays of every month at 3 o'clock. Tom will be here on the second Tuesday. And our friend Celine Demure will be here on the fourth Tuesday. So she'll be here next. Is that right? Are we on the fourth Tuesday? I don't know.
I'm on the second.
You're on the second?
Yeah.
And so she'll be on the fourth.
Fourth, yeah.
Okay. Thank you for listening. You're listening to The Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM in beautiful downtown Vashon.
Right on, sister.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And we will see you next month when we'll have some other surprises in store. Okay. And bye-bye.
Ciao.
Bye, everybody.